are listening to episode 5 of the Secret Origins Redux, featuring the origin of Tarantula.
Dedicated to the Secret Origins comics published by DC in the 1980s. I'm one of your special guest hosts for this episode, Rob Kelly, and joining me is fellow network all-star Max Romero. Hi, Max.
Hey, Rob. I'll admit it. I was proud of the way my web compound spurted in liquid form.
That's something to be proud of. It's a big moment in any young man's life where his liquid... Never mind. All right.
Spurted, Rob. Spurted.
This is the first and last episode of Secret Origins to grade not safe for work tag. So explicit tag. Thank you very much for that, Max. I appreciate it. We're here to talk about Tarantula, one of the members of the All-Star Squadron. This is from All-Star Squadron number 66. Now, we don't need to get into why Secret Origins is back, because we've already discussed that in previous episodes across the month. It's because of all of you over on Patreon. We decided to if the Fire and Water Podcast Network crossed a certain monetary threshold every month, we would bring back Secret Origins. We didn't tell all of you that that's what we were going to do, because we didn't want to like try to encourage people to give us money, because why would we do that? We just wanted to reward you in case it happened, and you all did. You all stepped up, and we crossed that threshold. So now we are delivering on our promise and producing 5 new episodes. Yeah, this is the 5th and last Secret Origins Redux episode as of this month. So big thanks to Ryan for letting us borrow this format. Although he didn't really let us, we just kind of against as well. But again, thank all of you on Patreon for supporting this. Secret Origins, of course, was an anthology series published by DC, with each issue telling the origin of at least one hero or villain from the DC universe. The series ran for 50 issues from January of 1986 to June of 1990. It also included 3 annuals and a special. All told, between the 54 comics with the Secret Origins banner, something like 120 origins were chronicled in the series. But since Ryan and his cohorts adequately covered that series, Max and I decided, like Siskoid and Bass did earlier this month, we're going to discuss one of the Secret Origin issues from the final half year of All-Star Squadron. All-Star Squadron, for those of you who don't know, basically the final 6 issues of that series, except for the very last one, number 67, covered a bunch of Secret Origins. 61 through 63, 65, and 66 did Secret Origin stories of various members of the All-Star Squadron. And I don't know whether those origins were meant for Secret Origins and then they just got dropped into All-Star Squadron, or Roy just decided to pick up the format and run with it, because of course that was his book and then All-Star Squadron was his book. But nevertheless, I'm glad that he did them, because there's a lot of fun stuff to talk about. Siskoid and Bass talked about Robot Man, as we mentioned, or Robot Man earlier. So there was some good stuff there. But before we go on talking about Tarantula from All-Star Squadron, we have to thank our sponsor, InStock Trades. This episode of Secret Origins is sponsored in part by InStockTrades.com. InStock Trades is your best online source for trades, hardcovers, and other collected editions, all for up to 42% off with free shipping for orders of $50 or more. Max, what do you got?
Actually, I'm going to step on your line a little bit here, Rob, because I'm sure you probably saw how hard it is to find anything collected that actually has the tarantula in it.
There's nothing.
Finding any All-Star comics.
Yep.
None of that has been collected. As far as I know, the only thing that was ever collected was Showcase of the All-Star Squadron that is no longer in print.
Right.
And so what I am choosing is Tomorrow's All-Star Companion Volume 3, which does feature the All-Star comics and Seven Soldiers of Victory, written by Roy Thomas, is featuring a ton of different artists. And, you know, the books, the Golden Age books, especially that Tomorrow's puts out, are just always so much fun, and they're so well researched. And so if anyone is interested in Tarantula or JSA or All-Stars and that era of comics, you know, they could do a lot worse than, you know, picking up these books and learning a little bit more about them. The cover price is $26.95, but on in-stock trades, you can get it for a cool $16.17, which is 40% off the cover price.
Yeah, I was in the same boat as you. The only thing I could think of that would have been close, that features the tarantula in some way, was the Golden Age miniseries by James Robinson and Paul Smith. But I recommended that on the last Secret Origins that I did with Shag, and I didn't want to repeat it. So I decided to piggyback on what you're doing, and I'm recommending All-Star Companion Volume 4, which covers the JSA from 40 to 51, and it talks about the Seven Soldiers of Victory, the All-Winner Squad, the Marvel Family, the International Crime Patrol, which I think is probably – I think they're the ones in power right now. And it features – this book, of course, written by Roy Thomas, features art by Alex Ross, Todd McFarlane – don't blame that – Jerry Ordway, Joe Kubert, Alex Toth, Gil Kane, Murphy Anderson, Gene Colan, Mike Macklin, Howard Chaykin, and others. Like Max said, this book is $27.95 and stock trades price is $16.77. That is 40% off. So you could get both these books. You could do Volume 3 and Volume 4, and that would make a great bunch of reading because you could have just the two volumes back to back. And as I second what Max said, the Two Mars books are always so much fun. They're really well done, well researched. So they are great, great collection. So I would suggest you pick up those two books over on InStock Trade. So thanks so much for InStock Trades for their support of this episode of the Secret Origins podcast. And then we also have to thank our Patreon supporters. This episode is sponsored in part by your Patreon support. Running the Fire and Water Podcast Network with so many shows requires a lot of online hosting and other services. We launched the Patreon last year, and you folks really stepped up to help us keep the network going. So if you enjoy shows like this, the best way to support it is going to patreon.com/FW podcast. Consider supporting the Fire and Water Podcast Network at a certain sponsorship tiers. You'll get mentioned on your favorite Fire and Water shows, just like these folks. So big thanks to David Ace Gutierrez and Gord Tolton. Again, just visit our Patreon over at patreon.com/FW podcasts. So, all right, Max, let's talk about Tarantula or the Tarantula. I think he's just Tarantula. I don't think he actually is called the Tarantula anymore.
Yeah, I don't think he has an article.
No, I don't think he does. So why are we here? Why are we talking about this? What is your, if you have any, personal history with this character?
You know, it's kind of strange. I actually do have a history with this character, of short one, but a history nonetheless. So my first, all this is going to be kind of a tortured history here, but I'll tell you. Well, first I came to the All-Star Squadron with issue number 3, which does not feature Tarantula, no. But does feature Plastic Man. And that was my first exposure to Plastic Man in a comic book, actually. And I really liked it. Yeah.
Your first was All-Star Squadron?
In a comic book, yes.
That's cool. I don't think I knew that. That's awesome. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, if you know that issue, that's a pretty great way to be introduced to Plastic Man. I mean, he's, it's kind of classic stuff. In his G-Man mode, and he turns into a giant torpedo with a screw on the end to get into him. Anyway, so it was for me a great introduction to Plastic Man and also to the All-Star Squadron and a lot of these kind of Golden Age heroes that I had never heard of before. So I kind of became a fan of the All-Star Squadron, and then later when annual number 3 came out, mm-hmm. and Tarantula does bookend that issue, he and Wonder Woman. And that was my introduction to Tarantula. And for a long time, that was all I knew about Tarantula. He did not, because the way I got my comic books was off the rack at the local convenience store. And so it wasn't like I could get comics, on a regular basis. So I kind of got what I could. But as far as I know, there wasn't a whole lot for Tarantula to do.
No.
And I still have that comic. And I won't say that it made me a fan of Tarantula in the same way that issue number 3 made me a fan of Plastic Man. But I thought it was pretty cool. I because it's the thing about the All-Stars, it was always kind of more of a mystery man sort of thing than a superhero thing. Kind of the way that Golden Age JSA was. And I thought he had kind of a cool look, and, you know, he was obviously biting on Spider-Man, but it was, you know, just kind of classic back alley adventure. And I kind of liked that. And that stuck with me. So even though I didn't know much about Tarantula, if you had asked me after that, who was Tarantula, I would be able to tell you.
Just think, if you had gotten the annual first, we would have Tarantula cast right now. We would have had that.
And that'd be done already.
Yeah, right. There you go. You'd be wrapped up. Perfect. Yeah, I mean, it's. I have that annual as well. Number. I mean, I have all the issues of All-Star Squadron. But part of the help of this, and we're going to get to this more in detail shortly, is that, of course, for most of his appearances that you or I are familiar with, he's drawn by Jerry Ordway, which helps. You know, I mean, if you're going to be, yeah. If you're going to bring up an obscure character, get one of the greatest comic book artists ever to work in the medium to draw him. That's always going to help. Yeah. He just looks super cool. As you said, there's not a whole lot of other history there. We'll get into some of the, I was actually pleasantly surprised to find that he did not disappear completely from the DCU later on, but again, we'll get to that shortly. In terms of my personal history with the character, and I mentioned part of this story, I went back and listened to it when Shag and I covered his Who's Who listing in the original Who's Who. I went back and I told part of this story because I couldn't remember the other part, and now I do remember. I don't know why I must have been hit in the head back then, because I couldn't remember it. But at the time, in the 90s, there was a brief period where I was actually up at DC Comics talking to some editors about potentially doing some work for DC via their Vertigo imprint. Oh, wow. And I met with a couple editors. There was one editor who's no longer around anymore that I met with, who took a liking to my work. It, obviously, it never went anywhere, but there was a brief period where I was exchanging, God, this would have been in the early 90s. It couldn't have been email. It would have been letters. Oh, my Lord, letters. It had to have been a phone call. It had to have been. No way it was the letters. I've got like a cool pen out. Dear DC. But anyway, there was this point where one editor said, well, if there were any, we're big on digging up old characters and doing like new versions of them. So if you have any idea for any, some old character that we're not using, put together a pitch. And so I did that, and I went through and I found a couple of older characters. And one of the characters I decided to pitch something on was Tarantula.
Oh, wow.
Because I liked the idea of a guy who was an author, a crime author, and a superhero. I thought that was a neat hook. So the idea that I had for bringing back Tarantula was that Jonathan Law, years had passed, and he had given up being a superhero because he'd gotten older. You know, he slowed down, paunchier or whatever. And he continued to write books, but his career started to fade. His career as an author, his books started selling less and less. So he has an editor that says, well, you know, we could trade in on your Tarantula years. And he's like, oh, I've already written about that. I've already milked that to death. And the editor is like, well, maybe if there were some new Tarantula stories to tell, we could do that. And against his own better judgment, Jonathan Law decides to suit back up as Tarantula just to go out and have adventures, to have something to write about. And I thought that was kind of an interesting angle, that this guy would put his own life on the line for his career when he really shouldn't be doing it. He's too old to be a superhero. And I actually thought that was kind of like not a bad idea, you know, if I do say so myself. And part of the pitch was I actually got the Who's Who page and got it copied at Kinko's. I remember the strange looks I got from people back then. And I included it in the pitch. And I actually still have that photocopy. I found it in an old folder.
Oh, wow.
And there it is. And obviously it never went anywhere. I don't think I ever even sent it into DC. But, you know, more than a lot of other characters, I actually sat there and thought about it. Like, what could this guy do in the 1990s? What would his life be like? Now, obviously, it couldn't have been set in the 1990s because he wouldn't have been a senior citizen by then. But it was something set in the 60s where he just would have been older and whatever. And, you know, I still think it was kind of a fun idea, and maybe it's been done since then. But I, you know, more than some other characters that I was a fan of, I actually sat and tried to write something for Tarantula to do. So that is my personal history with this character. Outside of his appearances in All-Star Squadron, I'm really not familiar with him at all. He first appeared in Star Spangled Comics number 1. Which was cover dated October of 1941. He appeared in 19 issues of that series straight, then disappeared. He did not return until the 80s, where Roy Thomas resuscitated him for All-Star Squadron number 24. So he's got like a 40-year gap in his DC publication history. He was created by Mort Weisinger, co-creator of Aquaman, and Hal Sharp. Those are the two creators. And I don't know if they did all of his adventures. I did have a chance to look at Star Spangled Comics number one. And Roy Thomas basically takes that story where Tarantula fights a crook named Ace Deuce. And Roy just expanded it and turned it into this issue of All-Star Squadron, basically for his purposes. Now, you had a chance to look at it as well. What did you think of that story, that original Tarantula story?
You know, I actually liked it quite a bit. I mean, I could see where this mystery man would I could see the place that he could have had in comics. I think probably the only thing that hurt him was that, you know, there were a lot of mystery men in Golden Age comics at that right. time, and it was hard to distinguish yourself, and there wasn't really anything that distinguishing about him except for maybe the web gun, which I think was kind of an interesting idea for the time. And you know, and this is decades before Spider-Man. And I thought it was an interesting character, and like you were mentioning in your pitch, I think it's an interesting hook to have the hero be an author, because it frees him up basically, because apparently, you know, he's a successful author already, so he's got free time and money,
and he can set his own schedule.
Yeah, he can set his own schedule, and he's getting, you know, he's getting story ideas. He's, and in the Golden Age story, he's basically saying, well, I've been writing books for crime novels for so long now, I wanted to basically get into the game myself. And, you know, it's not exactly the most heroic,
right, yeah.
you know, reason to get into being a superhero, but, you know, he is dedicated to it. And, you know, and he is, you know, the classic kind of two-fisted hero. And I could see where, you know, if I was a kid back in those days, I could see where I would have been a fan of Tarantula. And, you know, and of course, like all Golden Age stories, it ends in death. And, you know, but, yeah, it's actually, I thought it was a pretty good story. And for it being a backup story, it's pretty long. I mean, a lot of times these backup stories are only like 4 or 5 pages long. And this one is maybe twice that.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Yeah, right. It has a couple of like parts to it, you know, like it goes from one section to this section and the next. Yeah, it is a little longer. I thought it was fine. I think I was partly thrown off by the art by Hal Sharp. I just didn't really like the artwork very much. It was pretty crude. Now, I mean, a lot of Golden Age stuff is pretty crude, but there's some other art, even in that issue of Star Spangled Comics, that I really like. In fact, the story featuring Star Spangled Kid and Stripesy, I like that artwork a lot. It's like super cartoony. Mm-hmm. So I like that. So, you know, it's not that I don't like 40s work. Some I do, some I don't. So Hal Sharp just didn't do a lot for me. And obviously, it probably didn't also help that his costume looks like the Sandman's.
Right.
He's got it's the exact same design, except he has a cape. Sandman does not. And it's sort of funny because I think Sandman and Tarantula worked in reverse, and that Tarantula had a kind of weak costume. And then in the 80s, and also Scarton traded up for a much cooler one. And Sandman did the opposite. Sandman mm-hmm. started with that cool costume with the gas mask and the fedora and traded it in for the more generic looking superhero costume.
Right.
So they sort of switched off, you know.
And I don't know why they would have felt compelled to basically rip off the Tarantula's original costume. It's not a good costume.
No, it's not. It's just kind of dull, you know, the purple and yellow, and it's like it doesn't have like a chest symbol, so it's just kind of dull. But like I said, the reason most of us remember him is, of course, from All-Star Squadron, where he was given that redesign. Roy Thomas felt free, since the character had not appeared since Star Spangled Comics number 19, that he could just say, okay, well, as of this point in the timeline, I'm writing Tarantula going forward, so we can give him a new costume, and it doesn't interfere with any continuity that was previously established, because we know Roy was completely verboten in a Roy right. Thomas comic as to conflict with any established continuity. So he reappeared in All-Star Squadron number 24 with a brand new suit, with the brown costume, with the spider emblem and the headpiece, and it was designed by the great Jerry Ordway, who we've mentioned. I actually reached out to Jerry and I asked him about this costume because I wanted to find out what the backstory was to this. So I asked him, were you familiar with this character before Roy asked you to do it? And here was Jerry's answer. He says, I was familiar with Tarantula. Roy asked me to redesign the character. And on my first try, I avoided any major spider motif because I assumed DC wouldn't want any comparisons to Spider-Man. Second try, with Roy's blessing to work a spider design in it, I thought of a Howard Chaykin character designed from the short-lived Atlas comics of the 70s, and his character, the Scorpion, which was also set in the 30s and 40s like Tarantula. Howard, I think, invented the pouches that people attribute to Rob Liefeld. Anyhow, I came up with Tarantula, and I believe he had a spidery cape, which Roy decided to do without. Otherwise, my sketch was approved. Another note was that I had to fight for the reddish-brown color scheme. I think editorial was pushing for yellow or orange. I won that battle. And good for you, Jerry, because yeah. I actually think that's what makes it distinctive, is yeah. that he looks like the color of a tarantula. So I thought that was really cool.
Well, and it makes perfect sense for someone who is supposed to be working from the shadows. I mean, how is someone with, what was that, orange and what?
Yellow or orange.
Yellow or orange.
Bright orange costume. What is this giant creamsicle coming at us? What's that about?
Yeah, no, and I think that's what makes it distinctive. I mean, yep. I can't think of another costume with that color scheme.
Yeah.
And
brown and black, yeah.
Yeah, and it totally works for that character.
Yeah. I really appreciate Jerry for answering that, because I was fascinated as to what that was all about. But that's what makes him memorable, is that he's got this costume. So he continued to appear in All-Star Squadron. That was pretty much it. He did cameo in Crisis on Infinite Earths, and he had a cameo in Secret Origins #7. And then he basically did not appear again for decades outside of his appearance in Who's Who. It's funny to note that for the Who's Who issue, he was the marquee character. You know, where they had those wraparound covers, and they sort of had one character be the biggest character. It was Tarantula. Now, you could argue that was really kind of generous to that character, but nevertheless, he was, you know, he was given the front piece position, the same position that Superman takes in his issue, Batman, Wonder Woman, Aquaman, Tarantula. So, yeah. And then he basically disappeared for decades, but I was happy to learn that he returned to the world of DC Comics. So, Max, why don't you explain where he showed back up in the DCU?
Yeah, there was a new female version introduced in Nightwing #87. Her name was Catalina Flores. In that book, we learned that John Law, who is, you know, a little on the nose with that name there, but we do learn that Law lives in Bloodhaven, again, a little on the nose. But then he shortly after that died in a fire set by Blockbuster, a well-known Nightwing character.
Now, they never found the body, apparently. So, you don't find in comics, you don't find the body. At the same time, he's an old man by this point. So,
right.
But I mean, I was pleasantly surprised to learn that they, A, brought him back, that he still was living, and that they have a new female version. I'm like, that's great. That's cool. I like that. So, apparently, again, from what I read on DC Wiki, this version, this Catalina Flores and Dick Grayson had sex on a rooftop at some point. So that's exciting.
Yeah, that was kind of controversial. But
oh, was it really?
Well, apparently. Oof. Okay. So
all right, let's get into it, Max. Come on, this is the last Secret Origin. Let's burn the place down before we go.
Okay. Apparently, Knight in that issue, which I believe was written by Devin Grayson, was drugged, I believe, or had some sort of mental breakdown. I'm sure Batman fans are yelling at me right now for not knowing the exact reasons for this, but anyway, he was not in his he was not completely in his right mind, and so when this second version of the Tarantula had sex with him on the rooftop, it was and the writer says this herself, that it was non-consensual.
Oh wow.
But that it was not rape somehow. The second, and I guess we didn't really mention this, but the second Tarantula, the Catalina Flores, is more of an anti-hero, sometimes edging straight into villain.
Oh wow. Okay.
And she was inspired by John Law, which is interesting. And it's kind of cool, because I didn't know that Tarantula was a legacy character. I didn't realize that she had anything to do with the original Tarantula. But she, like I said, she's more of an anti-hero. She tends to work in a very moral gray area.
Hmm.
And the last I remember hearing of her, she was in a storyline on the Suicide Squad.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe she'll be in the movie. Maybe she'll be in Suicide Squad too. Oh, Maybe. You never know.
You know, they're always looking for people to you know, off in the first 5 minutes.
James Gunn likes obscure characters, as we know. Yeah. So maybe so. Okay, well, that's cool. I mean, the non-consensual part. No, that ain't cool. But but I'm glad they brought the character back. I'm glad that John Law, somebody remembered John Law and kept him around. So that's cool. I mean, I think he can do better than live in Bloodhaven, to be honest with you. But okay, maybe his book royalties aren't what they used to be or something. I don't know.
Well, he lives in the same apartment building as Nightwing, so
no, there you go. He's doing all right then. Okay, so that's not too bad. So so anyway, yeah, that's basically the history of Tarantula through DC Comics and our history with him. So we're going to take a break. We're going to run some podcast promos. And when we come back, Max and I are going to talk about All-Star Squadron number 66, the origin of the Tarantula, or origin of – I keep adding the article. Origin of Tarantula. Stay tuned.
The Justice League wouldn't help him, so Batman formed a new team. These people of power are all looking for something, be it their past, or a purpose, or simply somewhere to fit in. These are the heroes for a troubled age. They are the Outsiders.
We are the Outsiders!
Covering Mike W. Barr's 1983 series from the very beginning, as they face villains no other team can, like Agent Orange, the Force of July, and the Nuclear Family. Puns. This is The Outcasters, a Batman and the Outsiders podcast. Look for us with The Huntress podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. Or listen at our website, thehuntresspodcast.com, and follow us on Twitter at @BatOutcasters. We are the Outcasters, because to live outside the law, you must be honest. We are the Outsiders.
It's midnight, the podcasting hour. From fetid swamp creepy castles, the podcasting hour is your home for horror on the Fire and Water Network. Join me, PJ Frightful, on this quarterly anthology podcast that gazes into the mysterious and terrifying shadows of DC Comics. The moon is full and the bell tolls for midnight, the podcasting hour.
All right, and we're back. And as promised, we're going to talk about the origin of Tarantula from All-Star Squadron number 66. Before we get to the comic, though, proper, the story, let's talk about the cover a little bit. What do you think of this cover design, Max? You've got Tarantula in front of a web, and then within particle, you know, blocks of the webbing, we've got panels that are from that's going to take place that you're going to see in the story. So what do you think of this cover?
I actually really like it a lot. It's a pretty dynamic cover. Because we have Tarantula running at the reader, his web gun is in his hand, and I'm not sure exactly who. I don't know that I think about it. This is the Zuniga and
Arvel Jones, I believe.
Arvel Jones, and it works pretty well, you know, and it gives you these quick panels of what you're going to see in the story. It's a white web on a red background, which I think helps the whole thing pop, especially because he's got that brown and black costume. So, you know, he kind of stands out some more. And, you know, All-Star Squadron, I think, had some really good covers. And, you know, this one fits in right with them. I will point out a little bit, because someone is going to point it out eventually. But tarantulas don't spin webs. So,
oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So
the web gun and the web motif is, you know, I understand because it's a spider and that's what people associate with spiders. But you know, yeah, it's a little silly if you look too deep at it, but comics, why are you going to look that deeply at it?
Okay. Oh, wow. I never knew that. I've just learned something about science episode. Thank you, Max. I appreciate it.
That's what I'm here for. All right. And the, But like I said, you know, and it's a great look at the costume because it is. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to keep waxing on about this costume, but I think it is a really sharp looking costume, especially the mask and all that, but also those panels that you were mentioning. It shows Tarantula in the purple and yellow costume. It shows Sandman, you know, who was basically in this reworking of it, will be the origin, the inspiration for John Law. It shows, in a kind of a funny little bit, it shows Sandman and Tarantula shaking hands, and they're wearing the same costume.
It looks like that Spider-Man gif where they're pointing at each other.
Exactly. It really does. Oh, the irony. and then kind of a no panel at the bottom. And, you know, it's, there's a lot going on, but it doesn't feel, to me at least, it doesn't feel crowded. I think this actually works on a lot of different levels.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a really sharp design outside of the now catastrophic error that tarantulas don't spin webs. it is a really sharp design. And I got to tell you, I have ripped off this particular design a few times. There's been stuff where I've had to do designs based on webbing as a motif. And I borrow that where I take out part of the sections and turn them into panels. Some things I've done were directly related to Spider-Man, and then other things not so much, but I have ripped off this design many, many times. So I don't think that Arvel Jones and Dzyniga were the first ones to do this design. I think this was just in the culture, but nevertheless, whoever came up with it for the first time, you know, you've really helped me out a lot because I've taken from this design quite a bit. So yeah, I think it's a sharp cover, and it is the last of the All-Star Squadron Secret Origins. This is the penultimate issue of All-Star Squadron. So why don't we jump right into the story? So Max, why don't you start us off?
So All-Star Squadron number 66, The Origin of the Tarantula, by Roy Thomas, Alan Kupperberg, and Tony DeZuniga. After the superhero known as Tarantula breaks up a jewel heist and leaves the crooks tied up thanks to his web gun, he returns home to his swanky New York apartment where his housekeeper, Olga, is waiting for him. She notices he has torn his costume and dutifully offers to mend it. Now in his civilian identity as Jonathan Law, famous author, he muses how much fun he's had being a mystery man, even though for most of his days he was confused with the Sandman, whose first costume resembled Tarantula's almost exactly. Law then recalls he had asked his teammates for their backstories, their secret origins, in other words, and thinks maybe it's time to write his own story. Young Jonathan Law grew up during the Depression in Missouri. An introspective kid, he had a thing for science, law, detective fiction, and collecting spiders. Flash forward a few years, and Law has moved to New York to pursue a writing career so he can follow in the footsteps of his idol, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. In short order, Law's crime novels become bestsellers, and he is met with fame and fortune. But one day, Law spies the superhero the Sandman apprehending some crooks, and he is hooked. After weeks of research, Law interviews D.A. Diane Belmont. He claims it's to do research for an upcoming book on mystery men, but Law believes Belmont is the Sandman's girlfriend. She leaves behind a sketch she did of a potential new costume for the Sandman, to which he was indifferent. But it inspires Law. For months, Law trains his body to physical perfection, and I didn't know it only took months, and uses his scientific background to develop suction shoes, enabling him to walk on walls and ceilings, as well as a web gun. Olga, at first startled at her boss's new interest, offers to sew him a costume based on Diane's design. That night, Law heads out to fight crime and spies some suspicious-looking characters hanging around a pier, where a lend-lease Navy ship is on fire. He also sees his hero, the Sandman, arriving in his custom roadster. Tarantula wades in, fists flying, as does Sandman, who is dressed just like Tarantula, confusing the crooks. After they are taken care of, Sandman angrily wants to know who the new guy is, but he doesn't have time to stick around, because Diane Belmont was killed in the car crash, caused by the saboteurs shooting at his car. Sandman grabs Diane's body and takes off.
The next day, the newspapers are full of stories about Sandman, but don't mention Tarantula at all. This depresses Law, but he keeps going out as Tarantula, and one night he stops an attempted robbery by the crook known as Ace Deuce. Deuce threatens revenge, and Tarantula flippantly tells Ace to look him up in 20 to 25 years. But soon after, Ace escapes and goes back out on a crime spree. Tarantula does some digging, eventually posing as a crooked associate of Ace's so he can learn what the next score will be. It's a robbery plan from Radio City Music Hall, filled wall to wall with the rich and famous. Ace and his gang pull their Tommy guns, but Tarantula is there to stop them. He chases Ace up to the roof, where he has a small plane waiting. He takes off, shooting at Tarantula as he lifts off. Tarantula fires his web gun and brings the plane down, but that still doesn't stop Ace. He pulls the ripcord of a low-altitude parachute and jumps out of the plane. But when Tarantula lands atop it, Ace panics and pulls one of the cords too hard, causing him to drop like a stone onto the streets of New York. Splat. Law comes home and, despite Olga's worries, says he's going to continue fighting crime as Tarantula, partly because he feels needed, partly because he likes the thrills, and partly because it helps him get material for his books. Soon after, Tarantula joined the All-Star Squadron and, after getting sick of being mistaken for Sandman, allows Olga to sew him a new, more dynamic costume. Law muses one day he might have to give up the superhero game to go back and just being... Law muses one day he might give up the superhero game and go back to being just a best-selling novelist. But that day has not yet come. All right, so Max, what did you think of this story? I mean, obviously, again, it's Roy expanding the story we've already read in Star Spangled Kind. So, what did you think of this as a long form origin?
I really liked this issue. Actually, the Roy Thomas is, he has an obvious love for these characters and for this era, and that really comes through in the work he does, especially with All-Star Squadron. And I don't think you can go through All-Star Squadron through its run and pick out what anyone would call a terrible issue. I think it's all pretty well done for the most part. But I will say that this would not necessarily make me a fan of Tarantula, just because, for me at least, he is not necessarily a likable character. or I guess what I'm saying is that he, like we kind of mentioned earlier, is he is not, he's not getting into it for noble reasons. He is basically kind of a bored rich guy who said, "Oh, that looks like fun." and also maybe I can get some story ideas out of this to continue my, my high flying author lifestyle. And
I mean, come on, Max. The rich need a break once in a while. Jeez.
And aren't all writers rich? I mean, it's pretty easy, right?
Yeah, they don't have a high preponderance of suicides or anything like that. No, it's an easy gig. We all know. Easy gig.
How else are we going to fill out our penthouse apartments? But also, I do kind of like the fun that Roy Thomas is having with it, because, man, there are a lot of allusions to Spider-Man in this. from some of the poses that he makes on the walls to Olga obviously being kind of a step in for Aunt May, more than she was in the Golden Age stories, obviously. Mm-hmm. But she definitely fusses and worries about Tarantula the way Aunt May would about Peter. And they also, there's some references here to, hey, web guy, and and I think the other one actually says, "Oh, Spider-Man," and I think he thinks about it for a second and goes, "Nah." Mm-hmm. But the thing is that this also has the same quality that the Golden Age story has, in that at certain points John Law could have said, "Well, yeah, that's enough for me. I'm going to go back to writing and staying in my house, and that's all I'm going to do." But he does stick with it, and he does risk his life. And when Diane Belmont is killed, I think that kind of puts things in perspective for the character. And I actually, like I said, it didn't necessarily make me a fan of Tarantula, but it did make me interested in where that character could have gone from here.
It's funny. I'm glad you said that, because I thought about that when I reread this comic. Obviously, I read it at the time when it came out because I bought All-Star Squadron regularly. But because Roy was so dedicated to not tripping up continuity, he insisted on, not rewriting the origin. And so basically, as we said, this is an expanded version of the story you saw in Star Spangled Comics. So there's a couple problems with that. First of all, Ace Deuce is just a dull villain. He's just a gangster. Right. You know what I mean? Like, there's no great villain to give to Tarantula right at the beginning. So that's part of it. Ace Deuce is just like, when he dies at the end, you're like, yeah, fine, whatever, I don't care. He's just a guy in a derby hat. I don't really care. And secondly is, we see him in his new costume in the opening pages, because there's this opening montage where he's stopping this crook, and then he jumps into his apartment, and Olga / Aunt May / Alfred is waiting for him there. And we see him in the costume. But then after that, he does the whole, like, "Oh, I remember my origin," do-do-do-do-do-do, harp music. And we see him in the doll costume, and that's the whole story. So to me, it's like, I know that Roy would not have done the origin in the new suit because that wouldn't match continuity, but I genuinely think Tarantula's look is so cool that it would have been better, the character would have been better served if you could have found a way to do a whole adventure with him in that costume, as opposed to being stuck in the purple and yellow togs, because it's right. just, it's a dull costume. There's this one panel, I think it's on page 6, after he arrives at the dock, mm-hmm. and he sees Sandman show up in the car. By the way, Sandman's roadster is boss. That's just a cool ride. But there's this panel where he's at the top of the roof, and he goes, it's the Sandman. Who else would have a gas mask, not to mention the orange hat with the green suit? And he's pulling his cape over his face in a Batman pose.
Right.
And it's supposed to look cool, but he just looks doofy because the costume is so doofy. So it's like he doesn't look good. So it's like I totally get why Roy was sticking to the letter of continuity. And, of course, by this point, All-Star Squadron only had one issue left in it. So it didn't really matter, probably about sales-wise. But I would have loved to have seen a whole Tarantula adventure in the modern costume. I think that just would have done the character more justice. I do like that they referenced Spider-Man. I thought that was funny. You can't not reference it, I mean, at this point. So I like that when on the radio somebody calls him Spider-Man, and then Olga's like, there's Spider-Man. Their announcer said, you know, and she's all happy about that. He's like, no, I can't be Spider-Man or whatever. So I liked
all
that.
Thomas has given her such a heavy German accent.
Oh, man. Yeah, she is. Yeah. She's practically coming out with a tray of Wiener Schnitzel or something when he comes back from his adventure. It is not subtle. But otherwise, it's a fine story. It is kind of funny that, like, Ace Deuce has managed to land a single-engine plane on the roof of Radio City Music Hall. Like, I don't think the roof is built for that necessarily. Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know how he managed to do it, but okay. There's one fun little detail. When we go to Radio City Music Hall, we see that it is filled with the hoi polloi, and there's even a little notation, and there's some people that are clearly meant to be famous faces. And there's mm-hmm. even a little editorials note from Roy, and it says, a free tour of the Perisphere to everyone who identifies everybody, Alan and Tony Drew, members of the Kupperberg and Tony DeZuniga families, ineligible, which is fun. The only two people that I recognized, I don't know about you, was clearly the front guy in the front is Bob Hope. That's clearly meant to be Bob Hope because he's got the kind of sloped nose. And then two people behind him, I think it's clearly supposed to be Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
I didn't really recognize anybody else. I'd have to go back and I don't know whether if Roy ever revealed these, because of course, but there were no letters on this issue by the time number 67 came along. So I don't know if this ever got revealed anywhere. But I didn't recognize any. Does anybody else seem familiar to you?
Yeah, you know, I stared at this panel way too long. Okay. I'm trying to figure this out. I think the people that Bob Hope is speaking to are supposed to be Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz.
Oh, that makes sense because she's got a redhead. And you can see this page on our website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. I'm going to have a couple pages from this comic, including this one, in the gallery section.
Yeah, I would love it if people would actually, you know, throw their two cents in and who these people are. A couple right behind, going up the panel behind Lucy and Desi, behind the people that are behind them, I think that's maybe supposed to be Bogart? No, because Bogart is on at the top of the panel.
Oh, you're right. That is Bogart. That guy at the top left.
Yeah, yeah. Bogart.
Yep.
I think this guy is the other guy that I mistakenly called Bogart just now is supposed to be what's his name? He starred in movies with Bogart. He was in
Edward G. Robinson?
Edward G. Robinson. And behind him, Jimmy Durante?
Oh, maybe. Okay. Yeah, it could be. Yeah, everybody, when you look at this panel, let us know who you think is in here. I mean, and the one guy, the other thing, not to go on too long about this one panel, but Max did stare at it for 3 hours. The heavyset guy in the right at the very top of the panel, mm-hmm. and he's in front of a skinny guy. I'm wondering if that's not supposed to be Abbott and Costello.
That's what I thought too.
Okay. Cause I mean, Radio City Music Hall was radio, and they were before they became film stars, they were radio stars. Mm-hmm. So, and I like, again, I like Roy working in the real stuff, you know, that gives that, you know, virility, similitude. I like that we see it's Radio City Music Hall. We even see, you know, the statue in front of it, you know, and stuff like that. So I like the Atlas, Statue of Atlas. So I like all that stuff. It's a fun adventure. Like I said, it's the web gun is a fun, again, tarantula not having webs aside, the web gun is a fun thing. I do like that John Law is like such a Bruce Wayne. He's literally got like the ascot and he's got the pipe. I mean, he is such like the idle rich kind of guy. And then I guess the one other detail I want to mention is, and this is something Siskoid talked about in his episode with Bass, is that Roy Thomas insisted that Hawkman be in every issue of All-Star Squadron, either on the cover or in some panel, every single issue. Even when he wasn't in the story, he had to be worked in. And of course, you know, it got harder to do for these origin issues because you're like, well, Hawkman doesn't need to be in the origin of Shining Knight. So, but he is here. And on page two, where Jonathan Law is reminiscing that he has asked his fellow All-Star Squadron members, his fellow assers, yes, I went there, his fellow All-Star Squadron members about their secret origins, he imagines some of them, and we see their faces, and there's Hawkman. So he made the qualification that Hawkman does appear in this issue of All-Star Squadron. And I never really think about it, but you're right. It is kind of amazing that just in a couple of months, you can build your body to physical perfection. That's all it took. It's taken me 50 years and I haven't gotten to it yet. So I'm a little bit behind the curve on that.
You know, speaking of verisimilitude, I want to, on the next page, on page 17, the very last panel, I think is interesting because it points out a truth that would be, that heroes would have to deal with if they were ever upside down. But Tarantula is, you know, using his suction cup feet to, you know, walk along the ceiling, which also, you know, does that just like, does he just everywhere he goes, or
he can't sneak up on anybody because it's so loud.
How does that work?
But imagine somebody trying to sneak up you wearing flip flops all the time. It doesn't work. Flop, 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 flop. Oh my God. Tarantula's coming.
Run for it, boys.
Hide the loot, boys. Thwack, 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 thwack.
But what I was going to point out is that he has his cape wrapped around his arm.
Yes, yes.
You know, and there's a few panels where he's doing that. And it's, you know, it's the Incredibles. Why are you going to wear a cape?
Yep. Yeah.
If you're ever going to be upside down, why would you wear a cape?
I said, they learned that in The Incredibles. No capes. You know, you can get caught. It's not a good idea. But yeah, that's a fun detail that you're right. It's like he built this costume with a cape and then he's like, God damn it, this cape. You know, he's just constantly having to deal with that. Yeah, always in the way. It's a pain in the ass. So yeah, it's fun.
Actually, in the panel next to it, just really quickly, I think I just caught an in-joke by Roy Thomas. Tarantula earlier says, who else wears a green suit with an orange hat? Ace Deuce is wearing a green suit with an orange hat.
That's true. He is, isn't he? I didn't even think about that. You're right. But yeah, he's got the color scheme. He's always got his hat pulled down over his eyes, which doesn't seem like a great idea in this panel. Right. But yeah, I mean, the other problem is Ace Deuce is just not, he's just a guy. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, but again, Roy had to stick to the continuity. So, okay, fine. You know, we'll keep it with what it is. I have not read the subsequent Star Spangled comics featuring Tarantula. So I don't know if he ever got a supervillain or he just fought gangsters the whole time. So I don't know. Maybe if they had given him a supervillain and he would have had somebody more interesting to square off against, maybe he would have survived. I don't know. But yeah, I said his career was short. But otherwise, it's a fun comic. I liked it. You know, they devoted the next to last issue of All-Star Squadron to him. It's cool. Mm-hmm. I think there was more here. And then one other detail about this comic itself is after the story, there's a pinup by Eduardo Barreto of Hawkman. And I mean, you could argue, well, that's Hawkman in the comic. But to me, I thought Roy's rule was they had to be in the story, but not as a pinup. But nevertheless, there's this just separate pinup here just as a bonus drawn by Eduardo Barreto. And it's really cool. I mean, Eduardo Barreto is a great artist. And there's all these guys pointing their guns at Hawkman. And he's got his mace and his shield. And there's like a Nazi wearing a skull face, not a skeleton with a Nazi uniform on. And it's not really related to anything other than it's just a page filler, but it's a really nice drawing. Like it's a really sharp drawing of Hawkman.
It really is. It's really well done. I mean, I could, it almost looks like the cover of an Iron Maiden album.
Peace sells, but who's buying? So yeah, it's a really show. It would have made a great cover if they had ever done like a Hawkman special.
Oh, yeah.
It would have made a great cover. It's a really great. The design of it is really sharp. Again, we'll have that on the gallery post. So I mean, I think that's kind of do it for this for Tarantula for this issue of All-Star Squadron. Is there anything else we want to talk about this character before we wrap up?
I'm sorry. I think about DC's current status, and it makes me it's a speed bump in my brain. But since they never did find John Law's body, of course he's like in his 90s now. But I would not mind if he somehow managed to find his way back into the DC universe. I like the idea of this tarantula somehow being around.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I think, again, having a superhero who was an author is a fun hook and pretty mm-hmm. unique. And you could do a lot with that. Really could.
And I think it really kind of hooks into the era, when pulp, especially crime pulp stories, were such a big deal. I can totally see – it's kind of a meta commentary on the era that Roy Thomas is writing about, and the idea of the mystery man and all that. And it makes perfect sense that there would be some author out there who's watching all these real-life mystery men running around saying, oh, well, that's a way I can write some stories and start to fantasize, oh, maybe I could do that. Mm-hmm. When you first hear it, it might sound a little far-fetched, but, I can totally see that happening too.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's probably more here than a lot of other characters that DC just sort of forgotten about. So yeah, it'd be kind of cool. I wouldn't mind seeing him come back. It would be cool. And we're just redoing it, just like making, mm-hmm. setting it or not even redoing it, but having a new guy be the tarantula, like John Law's grandson. And he's an yeah. author too, because you could work in all that social media stuff. Like he's on Twitter. You know what I mean? Like all that kind of stuff. That'd be kind of fun. You could make it kind of contemporary. So I think there's probably more here if DC wants to explore it. So, this was the last of the Secret Origins issues of All-Star Squadron. After this, they did just one more comic, and that series ended. And again, one of my favorite books of all time. So that's going to do it for the issue and for Secret Origins Redux. This is the fifth and final episode of the Secret Origins Redux. So, big thanks to everybody over on Patreon. And thanks, everybody, for listening, for inspiring this show to come back. This was fun. I enjoyed doing the episode I did with Chag, and Chris and Cindy did one, and Siskoid and Bass. And Max, I enjoyed talking tarantula with you.
Oh, it's always fun to talk to you, Rob.
Thank you. So we're going to wrap it up here. Now, one thing I do want to say as we wrap up here, I, of course, listened to the first new episode of Secret Origins that Ryan did. And I got to say, I was a little daunted by its sheer length, because when I saw it on my phone that it was like 3 hours, I was like, oh, my God, it's just 3 hours long. So I'm listening to the show, right? And then it gets to the end of the segment with Donovan Morgan Grant, and I'm like, oh, the show's over. And then I look, and it still has 35 minutes left. I'm like, what? What's happening? What? So anyway, I listened to it. And of course, we all know we listened to it. Ryan took us on this amazing journey that weaved in and out of his history with this show, his feelings about this show, with the experiences he had in the birth of his son, Reese, and the scary stuff that happened there. And he really took everybody on. I mean, people behind the curtain, guys, Ryan didn't tell any of us that he was going to do that. So I think all of us were like, what's happening? Like, what am I listening to? This is amazing. And I will say that when we pitched this whole thing about bringing back Secret Origins, I didn't fully appreciate the sense of ownership and possession that Ryan has over Secret Origins. I didn't fully appreciate it. And the fact that he was willing to let us borrow his baby for a little bit actually means a lot. And it meant more to Ryan than I thought it would have necessarily. I mean, we all feel differently about our shows. Some of us are more free form about who could host a show and who can't. I mean, some of my shows, I'd be perfectly fine with people guest hosting. Other shows, not so much. I mean, someone else will host Pod Dylan when they pry it out of my cold, dead hands. So that's a show, I'm not giving up to anybody. But some other shows, maybe not so much. So I didn't fully appreciate how much Secret Origins meant to Ryan and how much it meant to him that he ended it on his own terms and he ended it successfully, which he did. So I very much appreciate that he was willing to hand this over to us. And we all, I can speak for all of us, say that we all tried to do the best job possible and make these episodes worthy of the Secret Origins brand. Because Ryan did a great job. He produced so many stories, so many segments across 50 or plus episodes. And he did end it on his own terms. And I was sad to see the show go, but I understood why he did it. And so again, I just think it was great that he was willing to let us play in his backyard. So to that end, since this is the final Secret Origins Redux, I didn't think it was appropriate that Max or I get the last word. So in keeping with the theme of forcing Ryan to do things he didn't agree to, we're going to give Ryan the last word. And what I'm going to do now is we're going to play my favorite clip from an old episode of Secret Origin. And you'll know what it is in a second when we get to it. You'll know why I love it. But I will give you a little bit of context about Secret Origins. And I will tell you, a couple of years ago, there was a time when I was going through something very scary personally. And it was a thing that I had to deal with later on in the day. And I had gotten up at 5 a.m. to go for my jog, because I do that because I'm an idiot. And I went out for my jog and I was desperately trying to keep my thoughts away from what might be occurring later on in the day. But I couldn't sleep because I was so worried about it. But I went for my run. And the new episode of Secret Origins dropped, and I went jogging and I'm listening to it, and I was worried and scared about what might happen. And then we got to this clip again, which we're going to be playing in a moment. And I started to laugh. I laughed out loud while I was jogging. If luckily nobody else is out there at 5 a.m. But if somebody had been, they would have been like, there's a mental patient running around because this guy's jogging and he's laughing to himself. But I was laughing, and it made me forget my problems during the length of this segment. Didn't last long, but for a couple of moments, I forgot my problems because this segment was so funny. I thought it was so clever, and I was so impressed with the amount of work that he put into it. So, I mean, to me, it's like that's the transformative power of podcasting, is that even in your worst moments, you know, if something really catches your fancy, it can alleviate your problems if only for a couple of minutes. So that's how we're going to end this episode of Secret Origins. We're going to end it with this, my favorite clip from the show. So again, thanks everybody for listening. Support the Fire and Water Podcast Network over on Patreon, and let us know what you thought of these episodes of Secret Origins. And who knows, maybe Secret Origins will even come back some later day. There are more origins to tell. Who knows? Maybe we can push Ryan into it like we did this time. So again, thanks everybody for listening, and we will see you later. Bye-bye.
Hey, Rob, how would you like to be on the Secret Origins podcast again, talking about the origin of Johnny Thunder and his Thunderbolt?
Just try and stop me, Ryan.
Really?
No, really, try and stop me. Really, I would appreciate it, because I'm actually going to start my own Johnny Thunder podcast, and it's for some reason it's called The Loser. I don't understand. But no, Johnny Thunder, you know, growing up, I love the JLA-JSA team-ups. I live for those things. They were every year. They were like little summer vacations. And every single time, it seemed like Jerry Conway went out of his way to work Johnny Thunder into the story, and then every single time I went out of his way to make him seem like such a loser. He always just made Johnny just so hapless that at a young age, I just was like, this guy's just a total loser. I keep saying loser, but there's no other word for it. Thunderbolt was cool, but he was just such a doofus. And then, of course, later on in that whole wonderful Black Canary origin story from JLA 219 and 220, which is the greatest origin story of all time, they not only presented Johnny Thunder as a doofus, but also like a bitter kind of an a-hole. So it just completed the end game for Johnny Thunder of just like, this is a character that nobody likes. So
I'm getting the sense that you don't want to talk about his origin then.
I really kind of don't. I think I'm burned out on Johnny Thunder just talking about it for these 5 minutes.
Okay. Well, I'll call somebody else.
Yeah. Why don't I say you get out of here?
Okay. Gene Hendricks. Gene has got to be up for this. Let me call him.
Hey, what's going on, Ryan?
Do you remember when I was talking to you about Secret Origins for the first time and you said that you'd be up for any character?
Oh, yeah. I love all those, especially the Golden Age ones. Those guys are great.
Well, then I've got the perfect story for you. How would you like to be on the episode that covers the origin of Johnny Thunder?
Johnny Thunder. Johnny Thunder. You have the Golden Age Flash. You've got the Spectre. You've got Our Man. And you, Johnny Thunder. That's how little you think of me. Really?
Gene.
No. I'm done. That's it.
Oh, come on, buddy.
No.
You said anything.
I said anything. I didn't think you meant the proto Jimmy Olsen there with his wish fulfillment device. I mean, the only reason Johnny Thunder exists is to give us Black Canary. Now I'm done. That's it.
Okay, let's try Greg. Greg will do it.
Yes, sir.
Hey, man. How would you like to do the Secret Origins podcast story about Johnny Thunder?
I don't know if I have much to say, honestly. I mean, no.
Hello?
Hey, Shag.
Ryan?
Yeah.
Hey, man. How's it going?
Good. You know how you told me you'd always be geared up to talk about a story on Secret Origins?
Secret Origins? Hell yeah. Absolutely.
Well, what do you say to Johnny Thunder and his amazing Thunderbolt?
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about the cowboy Johnny Thunder. The one from JSA?
Yeah.
Are you f***ing kidding me? We went through this, Ryan. You asked everyone in a Facebook chat message if they would do it, and no one wants to, man. Get it through your fucking head. Nobody wants to cover Johnny fucking Thunder, okay? DC Direct wouldn't even bother making an action figure of him when they made every other JSA member. He's not worth it. He's not worth my time. In fact, I'm quite frankly pissed off you even asked.
So, this is a hard no?
Oui, allô, Siskoid à l'appareil?
Siskoid?
Oui?
Hey, it's Ryan, man, from Secret Origins Podcast.
Okay, why, Ryan, why?
You know, I mean, you've been such a terrific guest on the show so far. Could I possibly get you to come back and talk about Johnny Thunder?
Pil Thunderbolt?
Yeah, Johnny Thunder and Thunderbolt.
Oh ben, tabarnak, non, non, mange de la marde comme là, je n'ai fait assez, j'en ai fait plusieurs des podcasts avec toi, j'en ai fait, oui.
I couldn't really catch that.
Ok, je vais me répéter, j'ai dit mange de la marde, je fais pas des personnages qui sont comme, tu me prends juste comme un fucking bouche-trou, je suis juste un bouche-trou dans ton affaire, fait que je fais tout le temps des personnages qui sucent. Johnny Thunder suce. Do you understand? Johnny Thunder, il sus.
You know, I think I did understand that. So, thanks, man. I'm going to go.
Yeah, pas de problème. Bye.
Okay. Well, I wonder what the Rolled Spine guys are doing tonight.
And Druncula actually wanted you to do a Secret Origins at some point.
Okay. For who?
The character that nobody else likes enough to do the origin for.
Martian Manhunter.
Ah, no, a Golden Age character named Johnny Thunder.
Johnny Thunder? Why do I feel like I know...
He wore a green suit with a bow tie and he had a pink genie.
I've seen Aladdin. We can do a... Oh, hold on, I got a text. Oh, shit.
Frank, while he's thinking about it, do you have any other ideas people I should ask? Anybody who you think might do this?
I want to hear Cindy Franklin do a Secret Origins with you. Without Chris, it's just you and her. I want to see how that shit works.
Actually, I already asked Cindy, and I don't think it's going to work out.
Oh my flipping gosh, that was awful. I just read that, and you owe me money. You owe me money.
Yeah, I don't think she's interested.
So anyhow, so...
Hey, did you...
Guys, seriously, I'm up against the clock here. I gotta know, straight answer, do you want to do the origin of Johnny Thunder?
No.
Then what am I supposed to do?
Let's throw on some more Careless Whisper.
That was a mistake.
What's wrong?
The Secret Origins podcast. I'm having trouble finding a guest for this one character.
Is it Batman?
What? No. Why would I have trouble finding someone to talk about Batman?
Is it Aquaman?
No, it's... People like Aquaman more than you think.
Really? Who's your guest on the Aquaman episode?
He didn't actually get an origin in this series.
Uh-huh.
But people like Aquaman.
All right. So who's the character you need?
Johnny Thunder.
Johnny Thunder? Is he a 50s street racer?
No.
Is he a greaser?
No.
I don't want to talk about Johnny Thunder.
You might like him. He summons a genie when he says a magic word.
Shazam?
No. Say you.
What?
Say you.
Say you?
Yeah, it's a Bodnesian spell that's phonetically similar to the phrase...
I'm already bored.
Well, then I'm really, truly desperate.
What's new?
You know, the last time you had me on, things did not go so well.
What are you talking about? Captain Marvel was one of the most popular episodes.
Yeah, because everybody hated it. They hated me. Because I bashed Roy Thomas for copying a script from 1940 and treating it like it would still appeal to readers in the 80s.
Well, see, a lot of the listeners are very passionate about that character. They were upset that you didn't come to the table with the same level of passion. That's
one of them called me a neophyte.
I'm sure he meant that lovingly.
Of course. So, whose childhood hero do you want me to piss on this time? Lois Lane?
No. It's a guy named Johnny Thunder.
If I do this, are the legions of Johnny Thunder fans going to attack me in the comments section?
Oh, absolutely not. He doesn't have any fans. Nobody else wanted anything to do with this guy. That's why I'm asking you.
You know, there was probably a better way for you to have said that.
If you're looking for a loving man, a loving man, say I am. If you're looking for a hugging man, a hugging man, say I am.